No gavel, I think Jim Bowling must have took it on his way out.
Small price.
I want to call to order the AMS TAC Committee for January 20th. My name's Tom Sheridan. Looks like we have a quorum, so we got through the first item. Second item is the minutes from December 2nd, 2010. You have a chance?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excuse me. Go on to the next. Third item here is staff reports. The first item, A, 3A, is financial progress report. Curtis?
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan. Jason cannot be here today, unfortunately, so I'm filling in, so this will be a shorter meeting than usual. But he knows I'm riveting. But just for information, our financial progress report through November is attached. We've got expended 36% of the budget. We're about 5/12 through the year in this through November, so we are definitely running smoothly under budget and no issues there. If there are any questions, staff recommends approval.
Is there any comments or questions on that? Do I have a motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Move on to the next item, which is item 3B, the technical progress report. Again, Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan. All right, the technical progress report, biggest thing is actually, because Jason's not here, one of the main things that he's been working on is the $4.25 million HUD sustainability grant, which we know Northeast Ohio received through NOACA. It's a combination of, I believe 23 entities signed on to a memorandum of understanding, and it includes the four MPOs in Northeast Ohio. I believe it's 10 counties. But anyway, at this point, they're still kind of setting up their organization of how they're going to use these $4.25 million to help better the region and improve livability, sustainability, those types of things. So actually, he's right now they're interviewing for the position of the project manager, executive director of this new agency that is being created. So that's why he can't be here today. But other than that, that's been moving along very well, and I think we're excited to see some of the outcomes. Also, AMETS did give out or award two planning grants, one to Metro and Akron, the other to the Village of Richfield. Both those are finally starting to get underway in terms of looking for to hire a consultant. So that's good news. Otherwise, on our website, we do have all of our podcasts up from the minute. So if any of you ever are really bored, you can always go to the website and listen to a nice podcast of the policy committee meeting if you ever missed anything. But other than that, that's all I have.
All right. Any questions on that or discussion? No? We'll move on to item 3C, the status of the AMS sub-allocated federal funds. Victor?
In the folders at the door, there's our funding program balances table and the same table that's up on the screen. We're halfway through fiscal year 2011. And this is the fiscal year 2012 column right here. And we had a project review meeting in December after both our tax policy last month. And based on that meeting, there were some projects that moved just, last time we I'll show you the balance a little bit later. But some of the projects have moved, and we'll put those in the proper years in the new CMP as we develop that and talk about that later on. And then also, again, in 2012, based on that meeting plus some additional review by ODOT, all these projects that are in here are now locked down in 2012. That means they have to sell that year. They've been reviewed to see their schedule they can make this year. And checking all of these cans, so we'll be tracking these projects to make sure they move along the way they should. And then going down to the bottom, there's our balances. After moving some of those projects into some of the other years, I think last time you've seen that, seeing this table, there's some pretty large negatives here, but now they're all positive. Since, again, we moved some projects around, and then in the end, you can see we have a balance of our overall funding program at the end of 2015. About $7.7 million. Included here, and this is our annual allocation for our three main funding programs, SBC, MAC, and Enhancement. As you can see, it's a little bit larger number than these. This is typically a 1% increase. We did get in the last couple of weeks some additional funds allocated to us. What happened was the feds closed out their year in, I think it's the end of September. So and that was for federal fiscal year 2010. And in federal fiscal year 2010, there were no earmarks. So what that did under transportation was add more money to the core programs. So ODOT got more money than they passed on, an additional about $921,000 to AMX. And that's included in this $17 million figure in here in 2011, even though that was fiscal year 2010. So how we got in this current fiscal year. So I want to point that out. And then again, we have our balance of 7.7 at the end of fiscal 2012. What we do plan to have at the end in the fall time is a new round of funding, and then that will use up that balance in 2015, as well as the allocations that we get in 2016 and maybe possibly 2017. So that's all I had on this item. If you have any questions.
Victor, is there still pressure to reduce the annual carryover balance from the state?
Because it is a new administration, I haven't really heard one way or another. It's too early to tell, I think. But when they did send us the additional $900,000, we did get another sheet that shows that we get 52% of our funding does not have to come to us. That's the additional amount of funds that we get from ODOT. So we did send that sheet along with this funding increase. So I think that's always a thing that is always there. How hard each administration pushes on it is, and that's yet to be seen at this point.
What those balances do allow you to do, though, is if you have a project in 2014 and you're able to complete it in 2013, you should be able to do that, but I would encourage anyone who can to do that. I know a lot of these projects have some pretty long and difficult development processes, but anywhere where we do have the ability to do that, I would encourage that.
Victor, did you say you're going to have a funding round this fall?
Yes, sir. We started it on. It'll start in the fall, but by the time the policy committee approves it, it'll be sometime a year from now or more.
Any other questions for Victor? Okay, thank you, Victor. Move on to number four, which is old business. Do we have any old business today?
We do not.
We do not. We'll move on to item five, new business. Item 5A, draft 2012-2015 transportation improvements program project list. Victor, you'll be doing that?
Yeah. Okay, thank you again. For those of you who don't know, the TIP is basically a comprehensive listing of transportation projects and services that are scheduled to receive federal funds in the next 4 years. These include highway, transit, as well as bike and pedestrian type projects. And the reason the TIP is so important, it's got several points that I'd like to mention, is that it's a coordination of projects for agencies as well as local sponsors to put their projects in it to see how it's scheduled with other projects in their area. It's used as a tool for implementing short and long range planning. It's also an aid to financial programming and administration. When we program these projects, we see which years have fallen and we match that with our budgets. And then also, it's a source of information for the public. And probably one of the most important things just to mention too is that there's no project that could use federal transportation funds unless it's listed in the TIP. So that's part of the reason why we're always doing these amendments to the TIP. New projects come up with federal funds from different sources we have to put them in the TSP in order for them to utilize this fund. The list that's included in this memo, first couple of pages, just kind of describe a little bit of the sources, where the sources of funding comes from for highway and transit, and then it goes into codes and abbreviations, and then it gets into the first table, which we call the table H3, that's our highway table. So this lists all the projects that at this point we know that are going to be funded with federal funds in fiscal years 12 through 15. And then the last two pages are the transit projects. So what we want you to do is to look at your projects that you're sponsoring, make sure that the funding amounts are correct the way you understand them, and that they're the correct fiscal years. We try to do a pretty good review of them, but every once in a while we miss something. So if you can get back to me if you do have any questions or concerns with some of these projects. Again, you can review those for accuracy. Just to talk a little bit about the remaining schedule for the TIP. This is just a project listing, but the TIP itself is a larger document. And we're going to submit a first draft of that to ODOT in February. There'll be a second draft that goes out in March. And then there'll be a two-week public involvement period in the beginning of April. And then based on any comments there, we'll make changes if need be to the final TIP, which will be presented to this committee as well as the policy committee in May for their approval. And we'll send it to ODOT the next day. And then we expect to have final approval from Federal Highway and Federal Transit Administrations by the end of June, so that we'll be ready to go July 1st, which is the start of federal fiscal year 2012. So again, that's all I had on this item. If you have any questions, if you have any specific questions on the problem or the projects, please see me afterwards or give me a call.
Any discussion on that item? We have a motion.
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Move on to the next item, which is item 5D, the draft of the 2012 Transportation Planning Work Program and Budget. Mr. Gardner.
Thank you. Draft work program and budget describes AMAP staff activity and budget for the upcoming fiscal year on July 1st. It's mandatory to ODOT to review. The major source of funding for activities listed in this program is USDOT Consolidated Planning Grant Funds. Other sources of revenue include federal CMAP funds as well as state and local funds. It has been estimated that AMAP will receive approximately $1.1 million in CPG funds. Planning activities in FY 2012. These funds must be matched by state and local funds at a percentage rate of 80-10-10, yielding a total budget of approximately $1.4 million for next year. Remaining funds from the current fiscal year 2011 will be carried over. The total local match for FY 2012 is calculated to be $139,860. Table 1 in Attachment 5E shows the draft local share calculation for each individual member of AMAP. Each member's contribution is based on the due structure established by the Policy Committee in 2005. The due structure is based on population. Consequently, those local share amounts might be changed if we get the census figures as planned in February. So Table 1 might be changed by the time the final draft is brought to you in May. Table 2 shows work elements and major planning tasks for FY 2012. Key activities include developing the next regional transportation plan, completing a new bicycle as well as a pedestrian plan, publishing the new TIP, directing a new round of funding, and coordinating the sustainable community planning grant that the region received last year. Table 3 summarizes all funds budgeted in the work program by source. Also included in Table 3 are planning activities performed by Metro and BARTA. The staff is requesting approval of the draft FY 2012 work program budget and asks for permission to submit it to ODOT for review. final version of the work program will be submitted to the policy committee for approval in May. Are there any questions?
Move to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, move on to the next item. The next item we have is a discussion. It's the electric vehicle initiative presentation by Ping He and Ellen Perdine.
I'm Ellen Perdine from the University of Akron. Thank you very much for letting us come today. How many of you are aware of the electric vehicles? You've watched the game, you've seen the ads, right? Well, let me just start, and please forgive me if I'm telling you things you already know, but let me just start with a 30,000-foot view. The United States is looking at electrification transportation in terms of states, and they're looking at it in three ways: leaders, fast followers, and fast movers and followers. The leading states in this already are out of the door. It's Texas, California, Oregon, Washington, Indiana to some extent, and a small area of Tennessee where they make these things. Michigan is also a fast follower. So for the rest of the states, our goal is to get in the game. And what does that mean? If you are considered a state that is interested in becoming PEV ready, plug-in electric vehicle ready, you can attract jobs, you can retain jobs, you can get electric vehicles delivered to your state, and many, many things. Since Ohio is the second largest auto manufacturing state in the nation, it is critical that Ohio be seen as a fast mover in this scale of readiness in the United States. Okay. So what is Ohio doing to become a fast mover? Well, the Department of Transportation in Columbus is leading an initiative to around the state to find those areas that want to step up first and be in the first wave of what they're calling PEV ready areas. So if I say Akron, I mean Summit County, the Akron sort of area. To do this, they have asked those areas that are interested in making themselves PEV ready to become certified through the organizing organization called the Rocky Mountain Institute, which has published a laundry list of things that your area sort of needs to consider if you want to be PEV ready. That's everything from charging stations to working with the grid to hazmat if a battery is in a car wreck. How do you take care of that? So there's training. It's a short laundry list, but they're all big topics on it. So Akron heard about this. We didn't get asked to do this. The university ran across the fact that ODOT was submitting grants to federal agencies to be PEV ready, and they weren't including Akron. And we called up our friends at First Energy, we being the University of Akron, and said, did you know this? And they said, what? They left Akron out? And First Energy called the city, and they said, what? They left Akron out? We don't want to be left out. We want to be chosen as one of the first movers in the state of Ohio. So we have, since really the end of October, November, put on an all-points initiative to get this thing put together so that we can go to Columbus with an application to the Rocky Mountain Institute, which has to be in February 1st, and say, we want to be PEV ready here. Now, it's a very broad statement when you say something like that. All you're really saying is that you have a nucleus of organizations and companies in your area that want to work together, that's sort of our MO anyway in this area, that want to work together to become a PEV ready area. Then you submit that. I mean, it's not saying you're going to definitely do anything, but that your intent is to do that. You submit that to the Rocky Mountain Institute, and they, if they approve it, give you a certification. With that, a initial key to the gate, we can talk about economic development. We can get electric vehicles delivered here. Our Ford and Chevy and Nissan dealers can apply to be dealers for electric cars, because this area is putting together a plan so that if people want to buy these cars, they can manage to own them. So our good friends at First Energy are working with the University of Akron, and we're all working with the AMATS group out of Akron to put this application together. It actually goes in for the city. Dr. Ping Yi, who is the director of our U.S. Transportation Center at the University of Akron, is leading this initiative on the academic side, which is the five-year plan, the technical study, and more. And he's going to tell you a little bit about that. But we hope today to give you a little bit of sort of a window into what's going on, because it's very exciting. I mean, this is very, very exciting. As the Vice President of First Energy said, remember air conditioning? Remember when you were a kid and there were air conditioning units and a couple of windows? And today, that's plug-in electric vehicles. So we're at the very beginning, which is why it's kind of fun. I mean, who knows where this is going to go? It's all, we're making it up as we go along. But it turns out that thanks to Dr. Yi and David Poulet and many of the people that are working on this, we actually are in pretty good shape. So I hope you'll enjoy what he has to say and ask us any questions.
Thank you. Now, did you get a chance to review this chart? As you can see, it may be hard for you to see, but we have leader and the followers. You can see that divided in horizontal axis, kind of on the vertical axis. You have this is high momentum, low medium momentum, and low momentum. Look at the other states with these green dots. You know, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland on the west coast, and you know, Orlando, Austin, Texas, and Denver, New York, and the east coast, of course. Then they are the, you know, high momentum and also the leaders. Like, they started like, you know, 10 years ago, even more than 10 years ago, as I was here. Now, look at what we, where we are. This is Cleveland and Cincinnati. We are the followers and the low momentum. So, as Adam mentioned, that we want to change the picture. Because we want, by no means, we should be a low follower. Now, the slides I have here will give you some technical, maybe, you know, not too specific a background, at least to see what is that, what are the advantages of doing this, and then why we should do that, and give you some confidence. So I'm going to go from there. Now this is the area with. Hold on a second. I don't like that. Can I get that off?
I think if you just click the X, it'll go away.
Is it so?
Thank you.
Now, this is the area we're talking about, the greater Akron area. As you can see, Akron is located right in the middle. And north of us, of course, the Calhoun County and the Cleveland area. And south of us, we have Canton, North Canton, and you know, Kent, Portage County here, and even Mahoning County and the Johnstown area. But to our right, we have Medina. Look at this map. Strategically, Akron is located in the center, and that makes us the best, really, in best position to pursue this program, as I will explain later, you can see. Now, this is some socioeconomic information. As you can see, we included several counties that are surrounding Akron. From the population, and this population in terms of percentage of the state, and the median household income, you can see this is how it ranges, and also the percentage of the bachelor's degree of this education that paid pretty much, you can see that. And here is the number of houses, and also in terms of the number of houses in the state, you can see the percentage. And then the home ownership, this cut off a little bit, okay. The point I want to make is, look at the, our area. If we add all this together, if we develop the program and deploy the program, okay, and then we can have a total of population of a quarter, entire Ohio. Okay, it's a very important stuff, this place. You can see other statistics, education, number of houses, all around somewhere, roughly a quarter. Okay, 25% in the state. So this is a very, very important for us to really take this initiative. Now, in terms of transmission network, you can see also, again, Akron is located here. You can see that we have, we're all connected. You know, through this, this will only show the inner source because I don't want to make the map too messy. You can see that. And then, coming from Akron, anywhere within a acceptable driving distance, as we can see. Now, this is, if you look at the first line, from Akron to all the other places, longest Youngstown here, 51 for measuring from the center. Okay, then you can see other places, like you can pretty much see data. Okay, from one place to another, from one place to another. But like Akron is because we're located in the center. In other words, within the you know short driving distance, we can reach many places. And then this is also it's good for the PVs because as I will explain later in some slides, you can see that the PVs so far cannot use them to drive as like long distance travel. Pretty much for commuter drivers. I can come back to this with more detail. This is a average driving distance we do, okay? This is the number, this is the income level, horizontal axis, you can see that. And this is the number of miles we drive on daily basis. You can see that. Roughly, you know, 30 to 35 miles, you can see it'll cover a lot of you know household income level. In our area, up in our area. Now, I want to discuss a little bit about the PUVs. Lots of models, okay, coming out, actually. Some already out, like it should be, well, excuse me, Nissan Leaf can be released today, and Mitsubishi. And also, we have another two, Toyota RAV4, that I'm driving the Honda CR-V, but the Toyota RAV4 is coming out, you know, soon, later this year, and a Kona model. And I have a Ford model coming out. Let me go back here to see all the details. But these models, we have a charging time, distance per charge, battery capacity, and a cost per charge. Because of the maybe income compatibility, I guess, with the projector. So we cut off some, but at least you can see dollar. And also, you know, the next digit is very important. And the cents, we can forget about the cents. Okay? You can see that the Chevy Volt, actually, we had an opportunity to drive that 3 weeks ago, on a more than that. About a month ago. And there's one model from the GM on campus. So we had an opportunity in the Martin Center to test drive. And many of us on the university campus, we test drive. It was super. And I remember the engine capacity and the motor capacity was 1.4 liter as equivalent to like a you know, internal combustion engine. 1.4, like we have the concept. 1.4, if you have like a gas engine, it doesn't have much power, like 1.4, we all know that. But when I was driving that, I feel, it made it in such a way that if you press more, they give more sort of like a gas equivalent, so that you make the transition smoother for the drivers. I try to do that, boy, you can feel the pushing force, you know, from their seat. It was like you're driving like a 2.4, and, you know, it's like a very, very good part. That kind of experience, really, really, I mean, it feels really good. Now, for this model, if you use 120-volt charge, that's ordinary plug-in here, 120-volt charge, it's going to charge you like 10 to 12 hours, but if you do 240-volt, now this will have to specially adjust, you know, make different wiring adjustment to these connectors. Then, that'll reduce the charging time to 4 hours. Now, in terms of the Nissan Leaf, 16 hours charge, but Nissan Leaf is going to drive more miles than that. Now, Chevy will only 40 miles because it has a gas engine also. So in case you need to go to Columbus, for example, you're coming back and forth, you'll drive roughly 28 or 300 miles, you want to do some other things, then, you know, Chevy will be good for you, okay? But then if you do just daily, you know, commuting from home to workplace, maybe, you know, around 20 miles or so, back and forth, you don't have to use any gas. And then after come home, just plug in, you know, in the garage, after, again, you know, you can do 4 hours and get fully charged. But at least I need to do 100 miles. This will allow you to commute a longer distance. Now, this is the battery capacity, say, 16 kilowatt hours, 24, so this one for longer, of course, it's a larger. Now, in terms of cost, I want to generate, ladies and gentlemen, to put into this cost per charge. This is $1.60. Again, I want to say it again, $2.40. Now, you drive 100 miles, you spend only $2.40. Now, compare with what you spend now, okay? Maybe how many miles you can drive per gallon, right? This is a super saving. I mean, this is already included in the tax. According to like a home utility, like you spend money, you know, every month you pay the utility bill. I mean, tax, everything is included there. That's the cost. So there's a lot of advantage. I'll flip to the next one, you can see that.
You have a good question.
I'm sorry.
Now, is that a full charge? So completely empty till
fully charged.
Fully charged.
Yeah, the system is smart enough. Once it's fully charged, then we're not charging anymore. So you're not wasting any electricity.
Okay. And then one other question related to the cost. The cost to the consumer is what's represented up there, but electricity is generated a number of ways. And so how is that piece measured?
Okay. There's like a microscopic level and macroscopic level. But my microscopic level on a consumer per vehicle basis, this model, I think it's a 32 upper incentives, government incentives. This one can be upper government incentives, 22,000. I think only 22 from the information we received today. Okay. This is a little more expensive, but it's still 30 years, but remember, but it's size. This one is a little more 33, but this one is a 37, okay, COLA. Yeah. COLA can drive more. This is,
That's not what I meant.
That this is microscopic level. The macroscopic level, I'm coming back to that. You see, you use electricity, how to get electricity and then you charge this. But now, I mean, first, energy folks are probably best positioned to do that, but from my understanding, I'm talking with them, 75% are still the power electricity generated from coal. So it's still burning coal. Okay. However, okay, things are moving in the right direction. Okay. Hopefully, okay, but the technology goes and more and more they will switch to like nuclear power and other means of like other means that I can only say that much. So I mean that's a very good question. In terms of the advantages. But at least on the consumer level, I mean, it's really, I mean, it's good. And you reduce the transmitting pollution. I mean, we have some national data, transmitting pollution is huge. I mean, there are several statistics that I didn't have here, but roughly I'm making to you, it's like a quarter. Of the carbon, is it a carbon monoxide? I forgot, I think that 1/3 or something is due to transportation, vehicle, individual vehicles. I have a few more, but I didn't have that as well. But very good question. Any other question? Very good. All right. Now, these are the charging stations, the different models, and these are from Colin. You can see, what they look like. I'm going to go over this fast, so you will see this is implemented in other places, different model, you can see. The level 1 or 2, 1 is 120 volts charge, level 2 is 240, this will be faster charge, and so on. You can see these are real stuff used in the other places. Now, we're looking at also, who are going to buy this, okay? Potential buyers. We figured, come from the four possibilities, both sectors, governments, universities, companies like a private industry, such as First Energy, so on. General public, of course, this is the main buying power there. If we get the general public excited about this, then I'm saying the managers will be more willing to. Once they started to buy, then it's going to be huge, driving force. Companies involved in the private industry, it could be other like a fleet delivery, like a post office and different possibilities. I mean, the nice thing with this is electric car. If you stop the vehicle there, okay, it's not using any power. It just stops there. But if it's a gas engine, you stop there, if you're not turning off the engine, you still burn, So a lot of fleet delivery, vehicles and things like that. Projected market growth, is roughly, we're somewhere here, but then it will only a few years it'll take off like that. So that's why we should get ready as soon as possible. location of charge station, type 1, pretty much in your garage. Okay, I mean, it's 120 plug in any place in the garage. Just plug it in and you can, for hours. Again, you don't have a full charge. For example, 100 mile range. You know, if you drive only 20 miles to work and you know, you need only 50 miles a day, you don't have to charge full time. You know? So, several hours rather than 8, 10 hours. You can do it. Now, this is level 2. Level 2 is more sort of the commercial. You can charge outside. This is a real picture, not in our area. You can see what we have here. This is reserved for electrical vehicles. You can see that. And there's like a plug-in. And you leave your vehicle there, plug-in. Of course, when you do that, then, you know, there are ways to do this. You can't be doing the vehicle. The charging system can't be a credit card type, like the gas station. They'll record, you know, who charged and how much time and how much charge, and so that they'll feel you on a monthly basis. You can see that. Now, this is a drawing to show that the possibilities, okay? You know, you can have parking spots and you can just, you know, stand there or something, just do the charge. Now, level 3 was not mentioned before. Level 3 was really very attractive to me, and probably to many other people. It has like a 480 volts, and it's 450 amp charge, it's a 200 amp charge. So it's a very fast charge. Half an hour, you're talking about the charge of both. The problem so far is the industry has not put out a standard, simply because the battery technology, people are still doing some experiment. Maybe in a few years, we'll be ready. And then it will be the really, I mean, the market, really push the market forward just like that. Talking about half an hour, just like a little gas station, no longer than a gas station when you can stop. You can go many places. I mean, you can just quickly charge so that, and, you know, it would be really, really good for you. Now, utility suppliers, again, we summarize the information here, and with the different type of charging, the driving distance, capacity, and the cost. Now, how will that impact the utility suppliers in our area, like the First Energy? This is what we have examples, okay? Did some simple calculations. In our area, if the total number of vehicles that will be deployed is 1, assuming it's 50, okay, then the impact on the grid is, if you see that, okay, if everybody charges at the same time, all 50 charges at the same time, it's only 300 kilowatts. Okay, not much. Now, if you don't have a concept, what is each kilowatt? 1 kilowatt is like one microwave you run. It's like a 300 microwaves you run in the whole area. So, you really, there's no concern at all. Okay, but if you have, if you do it over 8 hours, then it's even smaller. We do 4 hours, even smaller. So, you're not expecting 50 cars to be charging at the same time. But we have a next one. We said, if you charge at one single location, I mean, remember this, you know, single location is going to put more load on the transformers, local transformers. Okay? If I have a 5, 10, 20, this is a 5, 20, 10, 20. Okay? Now, if also everybody charging at the same time, look, this is more. Okay? If you have a 20 charging, this is like 144. The total here is, it's okay, I guess. You're not doing like over 35. Look at only this number. 144 kilowatts. If you have 20 vehicles charging at the same time, same location, I consider this is very rare cases. Think about this gas station now, a gas station. How many pumps do you see? Normally, what? 8, 12, right? Or more, 15? 20, you know, get pumped. There's no need, at least from now, from the first phase, at this moment. Maybe you have several vehicles. Maybe 5 vehicles are charging. I mean, that's it's already about only 36 kilowatts. So in terms of the grid, I mean, pressure on the grid, so far it's not a big problem. But later on, the concern is, once we have like a market share, 10% to jump to 20%, 25%, 50%, in other words, 50% of the cars so far we use it, let's say in like 20 years, okay, or just assume, okay, this is the number. Now that's going to put a lot of pressure on the power supply, on power grid, because we need to upgrade the transformers, and maybe to environment, a lot of things there. But that's something that electricity companies, the utility companies, because they make money, they will have to do some investments. This is just a simple thing to show that other times utilities use, but if you use, you know, PUVs, they just add some extra loads on the on the network. But this is better than here because this is already high and some additional may reach, you know, surpass the capacity. So just the concept. In terms of deployments, you know, we figured, you know, for the first part of the study, maybe we can do some like these green dots. It's hard for you to see green and dark. Okay, green means level one and green dark means level two and red means level three. You can see that. Now if you have a lot of stations installed here, okay, charging stations, people really can come to Apple. This radio is an increased activity level and you can use it, the PVs. You can come, the Apple can go from here to here, here, here. Again, remember that size, the distance, Apple can deliver from here to Yangshan. Especially this area is only 51 miles if you have like a Nissan Leaf or you know, around 480 miles. You can easily travel here and then put it, you know, plug in and then catch on back. So, anyway, I'm going to just stop. We already run a lot of time. I know you have a lot of other activities in the schedule for the meeting. Given an overview, this is the way we're thinking. And also, we hope, you know, we get support from you folks. And this is beneficial for everybody. That's why economy, job creation, a lot of things that can really have a chain reaction after this. Any questions? Yes.
I don't have a question, just a comment. My name is Brian Smith. I'm from Parta. We're building a multimodal facility in downtown Kent. Part of that multimodal facility is a charging station. At the moment, planned for one. But just FYI.
That's great. That's great. Good to know.
What's the capital cost on that charging station?
Enough. actually,
yes.
I'll let him answer. Probably know better than I would.
If you
we haven't gotten to that stage.
You have your garage. You can do a Type 1 charge, no problem. I mean, 120 don't have to do anything. But if you want to convert it to Type 2, and the Rocky Mountain Institute that Alan mentioned, you know, they did study, and from the data they collected, roughly $2,000 should be able to convert, with everything included, convert into a Type 2 charging facility, so that you can come right back and.
That's lower than the number we have. I was thinking at least five. So.
Well, the price is great. I mean, the Ford coming out with the model also like a 24,000. Now, Nissan Leaf is 22,000. That's like a comparable, right, to like a, you know, like Toyota Camry type. So we can see, you know, a lot of response from the market. Any other questions?
Okay, well.
Thank you.
Dr. Yi, thank you for coming in. I guess I have a question. Will this information be available to Amex?
Yes, we can get the PowerPoint and have it on
our
site.
Yes, we can have that. Yes.
Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry.
I have a question. What happens to the gas tax dollars? They go away. We're
going
to have to replace some sort of a
kilowatt
charge.
Right, right. In the future, I'm going to try to jump in and answer your question. Because
we don't have
to. I can't wait. Because I was waiting for you guys to ask a question. I didn't have time. I'm a treasury professor, and you know, I serve a lot of committees in National X5. But this weekend, I'm going to D.C. to attend the TRB, the Treasury Research Board meeting. Now, in the future, this is the way it goes, okay? As the tax dollar from the gasoline, okay, you know, in the future, I think a new policy will come out. It will be usage-based. In other words, it will track how many miles your vehicle. It's true. Okay, it's been
true.
And then it was, right, right. It'll be just based on, you know, how much you use.
Like a toll road.
So, the more you drive, the more you pay. So that way, well, they have ways to find, you know, to get money from themselves.
The more you pay, the more you drive, it's going to be.
More?
Can you estimate?
Yes.
How much it's going to cost?
Oh, wow. How much government need the money they were charging? Oh, right.
400 miles per tank, 25 miles a gallon. That comes out 16 gallons that. What, 50 cents a gallon for gas tax? It's going to come down to so many dollars per 100 miles or per charge.
Yes.
And my rough figure is about $2 per charge, which is more than the actual charge for the electricity. It's going to be in a tax to support the highway network. And if we don't have support for the highway network, what's these cars going to run on?
That's a good point. I mean, we need money.
Or use the potholes for stormwater storage.
How about inductance coils along all the guardrails to use for inductance charging?
Well, you guys have a lot of good ideas.
Last semester, we had some students from Toledo, University of Toledo, on Akron campus with a presentation on solar vehicles. And those kids were thinking, hey, in the future, we're working on solar panels. We have a solar panel on top of the car, and we can go anywhere without any problem.
Except in the Akron area.
They think the solar panel, a small piece, will support so much power. So that'd be great.
All right. Any other questions? And we'll move on. Item 6A, Resolution 2011-01, adopting the revised funding policy guidelines. Victor?
Thank you. Back in November, the policy committee brought up the issue of allowing greater flexibility with our local share requirement on our funds. And then at the last meeting in December, they approved a motion to allow greater flexibility. And then, so what this resolution is doing is actually changing the funding policy to make it official. What it is all of our funding programs require a 40% local share. Right now, the way the policy is written says that local share has to be purely local money. It can't be state money or any other type of non-federal fund. So what the policy committee agreed to do is change that so that the local share, that 20%, could be other state funds to match our federal funds or any other type of non-federal funds to match our funding. The reason we're doing this is so that we can help out the locals, make these projects more affordable to them. And in most cases, this non-federal source of funding would be like the Public Works Commission funds. Attached then to this memo and resolution are four funding programs, the SDPC MAC Enhancement and Restriction Programs. These are the pages from the funding policy, and you can see in red what the change is, and then you marked out some of the other ones. So basically, the local share may be from local, states, or other non-federal sources. With some of the minor change, many other MTOs in Ohio allow this. So with that, the staff recommends approval. And one more thing, just to note that once the policy committee approves this change, the funding policy will apply to all the projects from that point on.
Any discussion?
Just had a question. In the second paragraph from the bottom, they talked about the requirement to pass legislation for the 20% local match if those other funding sources don't materialize. But I didn't see that anywhere in the funding policy.
That's kind of separate. We've always done that. We have a sample of legislation that our sponsors have to fill out. This is kind of what it's referring to. It's not really written in the policy itself. And that the verbiage on that will change somewhat just from that what we're saying here. I mean, we still do require them to provide the 20% local share. Right now, we're just saying it doesn't have to be from specifically local share. It could be any other non-federal source.
Okay.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion on that?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we'll move on to item 6B, which is Resolution 2011-02. And again, Victor.
There's three projects here. The two are part of the digital redevelopment project on Wood Street. This amendment is to add $3 million SDP funds for right away in this period on the Maslin Road project. They're looking to adjust the funding amounts for both right-of-way and construction at the end of the fiscal year. And then the last project, South Main Street, the amendment to move the construction phase into
Any questions on those items? Do we have a motion?
Motion approved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we move to item 6C, which is resolution 2011-03. Mr. Gardner.
Resolution 2011-03 is an amendment for Metro and Parkland. In December, OVAT announced the availability of $50 million in state CMAQ funds to be used for the improvement of the state's aging public transportation bus fleets. These funds were made available through OVAT's Clean and Green program in fiscal year 2011. Projects will be funded at 100% federal share. In the MS area, Metro and Parkland were both awarded funds for replacement buses. Metro will receive approximately $3 million and Carter will receive approximately $2.8 million. In light of the awards by ODOT, Metro and Carter are requesting that the current TIP be amended to add these projects. Metro wishes to add 7 large compressed natural gas buses at $3 million and Carter would like to add 7 biodiesel fuel buses at $2.8 million. The staff recommends approval.
No questions. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we move to item 6D, which is resolution 2011-04.
Resolution 04 is an amendment to add funds for PARTA. Item 6D did not make it into the mail out due to time constraints. We were just notified of this award, so we put it in the mail out at the door. In December, the Office of Transit announced the availability of an additional $10 million in state CMAQ funds to be used for the startup of user innovative transit service in the state. On January 6th, ODOT announced the awarding of these funds to 11 transit agencies. In the AMATS area, PARTA will award funds to run a route from Ravenna to Twinsburg via Streetsboro. The bulk of the ridership for this route is expected to consist of employees traveling to employment centers in the Streetsboro and Twinsburg area. PARTA will receive $365,000 in federal funds, and the total project cost will be $400,000. And in light of these awards, part is requesting that the current TIP be amended to add these funds in this project. Staff recommends approval. Are there any questions?
Any questions? For the motion?
Move to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Item number 7, other business. No other business?
Okay. So, I suspect most of you have heard already that ODOT has its new director in place, Jerry Ray. In District 4, we have our new director in place, Tony Uranker. I'm hoping to get him to the policy committee meeting next week, although he's got a pretty aggressive schedule, so I can't guarantee that yet. Tony actually has 17 years with ODOT before. He's coming his immediate past job. But he was a business and human resource director. One of the southern suburbs there. But he worked in District 12 for quite a while, so he's very familiar with ODOT. And we're looking forward to having him on board there. We're probably going to be doing some restructuring both at the central office and in district levels. So there's going to be a lot of moving around, probably more so at central office than in district. But I'll let the board know whenever we hear more on that sort of thing. So,
thank you.
Just wanted to give you an update.
Is there Don?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jack. Any other business? No? I'll make a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Our next meeting is going to be Thursday, March 17th at 1:30 at the Stowe Safety Building here. I will not be running it. Thank you all for coming.
Thanks.